Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, February 10th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, it's great to be here this afternoon. Wendy Wilson should be with us here just shortly. We are first going to give the market report for precious metals and the markets briefly, and we'll talk, have a little bit more discussion on that during the second and third segments of the program today. So let's get started. We have gold today following the New York spot price after market trading. You're looking up to, we're looking at 740 at 1197.20. And of course, earlier in the week, we did hit that 8-month high as it poked its nose over the $1,200 level on Monday. And we have silver up 4 cents today at 1538. Platinum is 938. Palladium, $526, up 7. USDX today was higher earlier, but we're seeing pressure 0.24 to the downside at 95.81. Crude oil, 0.53 at 27.41. And the paper markets today, I guess they didn't like what Janet Yellen was yelling. And the Dow was down 99 points at 15,914. The NASDAQ is up 14 at 42.83. S&P basically unchanged at 18.51. 10-year yield, people still going into the 10-year, into the bonds, the 10-year yield, 1.70. That's down 0.02. I just love it. Chesapeake Energy again down another 13%. But no, we're not going to file bankruptcy. And let's see. It doesn't take much to, you know. Anyway, let's see. I wanted to check on the Japan was down another 2.3%, over 300 points. Germany was up at 1.55, but they pretty much have been hammered of late. And it wasn't that long ago that Germany was, you know, way above 10, probably approaching the 11,000 mark. So I forgot we have Wendy Wilson joining us. Let's just go. So I stopped the rambling and we talked to Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
How's everybody doing? Good.
Just great.
Not too bad.
Well, I thought we'd talk about this new free market. It may surprise you. It's actually, you know, human organ transplants were started in 1954. And by the 1970s, they became kind of a popular option. So current law prevents the black market selling or purchasing of human organs, but this could change, okay? We have over 100,000 patients waiting for new organs in the United States on the Organ Procurement and Transplantation Network, and a large percentage aren't going to receive a transplant. So according to the Hoover Institute, patients needing a kidney are on the list an average of 4.5 years, and only 17% receive a transplant. So there are now more people on the organ list, which is pushing up the wait time and reducing the likelihood of getting an organ transplant than just a decade ago. So the U.S. has current laws in place protecting people from having their organs harvested without their consent and prohibiting the free marketplace of organ sales for cash. Now, in 1984, the United States Congress enacted the National Organ Transplantation Act. And this law made it a crime for hospitals or anyone to procure human organs for the purpose of making money on organ transplantation outside the legal transplant laws, which prohibits cash payment for organs or a black market. But guess what's on the horizon, Melody and Al? We may have a change. The U.S. Health and Human Services, along with the U.S. Attorney General, have been encouraged to look at ways that they can legally circumvent the National Organ Transplantation Act and make a way for a free marketplace to sell human organs. So there's a lot of money to be made in this trafficking of human organs, and there's more than enough patients waiting for transplants. So sick patients, you know, six patients would mortgage their home for a second chance, right, to get an organ. So, and diabetes is kind of running rampant in the United States, and the kidney transplant is the organ that is in most demand. So if authorities are successful in establishing a legal free market for human organs, we could see healthy people willing to sell a kidney. So currently, transplant organs are donated. So the medical expense that's associated with these organs is the prep work, the harvesting, and then the transplant itself. And according to transplantliving.org, the cost of a kidney transplant is currently $262,900. So if people expect to get paid for one of their healthy organs, the cost of transplants could be going up and passed on to the recipient. And why would we expect that? Well, there's a complication risk when you donate an organ. The statistics are for every 10,000, there's 3 cases that are going to have complications. So that means that a person who's selling a piece of themselves may need to absorb significant medical expenses and lose a lot of time from work. So this organ-free market could impact a lot of industries, including medicine and life insurance. So U.S. Attorney General, if they want to steer clear of any appearance of black market or exploitation issues, they're going to need to prohibit private organ sales, and sales would have to be regulated by the nonprofit called United Network for Organ Sharing. Any questions?
How much can you get for a kidney?
I'm getting to that, Al. So good of you to ask. The federal government approves of these changes regarding the human free market organ network, if you will, they want to try to deflect some of these expenses that the free market may bring to organ transplantation. So they're thinking of other forms of donor payment rather than cash. And they've made suggestions such as free health care, free funeral, disability insurance. The government may allow the donor a special tax credit or a perk on their retirement plan, or maybe some special donation to his or her favorite charity. So some countries like Singapore and Australia have allowed limited payments for live donors for an organ. For example, a kidney there costs, the person who donates a kidney will get $4,000 and also be compensated from time lost from work as they recover. Another consideration, Al, Melanie, is to improve the supply and demand of other kinds of organs like heart and lungs. And they're thinking of allowing the donors to sell them when they're alive, and but they won't be harvested until they die. So they're calling this plan selling forward, okay? And why would authorities in medicine really want a system like that? It's because
the price is going up.
No, it's because some organ donors, after they die, have family which block the harvesting of the organs. So if the donor has already received, let's say, some compensation ahead, or is going to be, you know, his estate's going to get paid, this would give a medical establishment the grounds to go ahead and take what they've already paid for. See?
You just shake your head.
I know.
Shake your head. It's...
Well, it's going to get really bizarre. I have some questions I want to bounce off of you guys. Now, what if someone impersonates you and sells your organs, gets paid for it, you know, organ selling forward, and then for some reason your organs upon your death can't be used, what then? So identity organ theft could become a real problem.
So we're going to have to imprint a barcode on each one of your organs to make sure that they're...
Isn't there an age limit?
I want to get to a particular problem about that you bring up, Melody. And the other problem is if you sell your organs and let's say you're in a car accident and they're damaged and you've already been compensated, you got to get the money back, I guess. I don't know. It's just complicated just to think about it. But this could open a whole new career of organ brokers, you know, to protect the best interest of everybody. A new law specialty to represent people that could be otherwise exploited. So, I mean, there's a whole market here. But here's something that you brought up, Melanie. What if, you know, head injury patients will have a big target on them? Because young people like that get in accidents like motorcycle accidents and so forth, and they're relatively healthy, but they have a head injury or they got hit on their regular bicycle. They're going to be at severe risk. And this is why head injury patients usually are in comas and they really rack up the medical bills into the millions, right? So they may be more at risk of having their organs permanently removed prematurely too. So the risk of sounding macabre here, medical insurance companies may be influenced by this organ-free market to refuse to pay for treatment and suggest that the coma head injury patient go ahead and, you know, cough up their organs to cover some of their patient bill. Yeah.
Well, if you want to get macabre, you can also consider the possibility there's going to be a premium on the organs from youthful people as opposed to elderly.
I'm thinking
that's obvious. How about mom and dad decide to say, well, little Bobby, who was just born yesterday, we're going to sell his organs. If anything happens to him between now and when he turns 21, we're going to allow his organs to be harvested for X number of dollars, which we will take now.
Wow. And, you know, that's really sick. But, you know, and you got to wonder if the wealthy will have, you know, first call.
Whoever's got the money's going to have first call.
I know, the auction of organs. Well, here's we need to follow the money here with this whole free market push, because in many instances, medical treatments for patients with failing organs can sometimes be more expensive than a transplant. For instance, a kidney transplant costs about $263,000 and can extend the life of a patient about 20 years. Compared to kidney dialysis, if you're on that for 4 or 5 years, that costs about $350,000. And insurance companies already know this. So I'm sure they're behind it. They're pushing. They're for it.
They are for what?
They're for a free market apparently, there was a alleged letter sent to the U.S. President, U.S. Attorney General, and the Health and Human Services Secretary by some influential people, let's put it that way, which said, we call for a swift initiation of evidence-based research on ways to offer benefits to organ donors in order to expand the availability of transplants. So supply and demand is what they're creating.
And they're looking for alternatives to cash now.
Right.
You give us your liver now or portion of it or your kidney, and we will give you money later. This reminds me, this is, you know, this is just standard operating procedure for the government. Contribute your money to Social Security now, and you can trust us. It will all be there for you when you retire.
Well, here's the thing. They got to have this legal consent, and they're working around this legal consent. Because in the United States right now, it's been established that hospitals have to have informed consent from the patient donor or from the family before harvesting organs for transplant. Now, informed consent is really a legal declaration of the donor's wishes. However, if there's a push to change that to what is called implied consent, and some countries have already switched over to implied consent, which are Argentina, Austria, Brazil, Chile, and Denmark. So don't ever die over there. Okay. Switching to implied consent. Yep. It's a plan to narrow the gap between supply and demand of the human organs. And so it means that after the person dies, their organs can be harvested, and families have to really be on the ball and have their paperwork together if they want to block that.
It's maybe up to the individual. It will be implied that you've consented to have your organs harvested unless you have expressly declared prior to your death that you didn't want it.
Right. So in the United States,
and your failure to address the issue will create the implication of your consent.
Right. Silence. Right. Well, and here's the thing, but a lot of people don't understand. In the United States, when they harvest organs, they bill the donor for that. The cost of harvesting an organ can range from $65,000 to over $130,000. So a kidney right now costs about $67,200 to harvest it. So hospital gets a free organ to transplant into a patient, make hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they also get paid to harvest it. And if you think this isn't going to happen, a lot of people say, oh, this free market of organ, whatever you're talking about there, Miss Wendy, is never going to happen. Well, if Planned Parenthood can exploit the unborn selling body parts and avoid punishment, what makes you think that modern medicine in this area won't?
I have a question for you, Wendy. What's the difference between the black market and the free market?
Well, if the government doesn't have his hand in it, they call it the black market.
That's what it comes down to. It's not taxable. That's the black market. We can sell the same thing in what they call the free market so long as the government gets its cut.
Well, I say just, you know, do your organ cleansing, keep your organs in good order so you don't need to replace them, and you can take the cellular stress off of them with organ cleansing with some herbs, and that's what we do at Apothecary Herbs. So if anybody out there wants to learn how they can do that, give us a call, ask for a catalog. The number is toll-free at 866-229-3663. ThePowerHerbs.com is the website. And as always, a pleasure being with you guys.
Thank you,
Wendy. All right, Wendy. Enjoyed the information. Again, it seems to get more and more bizarre the things that are happening in the medical field. The whole world is just changing so rapidly, you can't count on it to be the same a year from now as it is today. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. You can reach her at 866-229-3663. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Got an article here from 24/7 Wall Street, and the headline is 99-cent gas may be on its way. The International Energy Agency February oil market report will put more downward pressure on crude oil prices, just as the price of gasoline in some parts of the United States dips to above $1.10 a gallon. Prices are moving swiftly to below $1 a gallon, a price last posted in the United States in December of 1993. That's pretty amazing. That means the price is falling to a nominal price comparable to what they had 23 years ago, 27 years ago. The new IEA report's authors wrote, having peaked at a five-year high of 1.6 million barrels per day in 2015, global oil demand growth is forecasted to ease back considerably in 2016 to 1.2 million barrels per day, pulled down by notable slowdowns in Europe, China, and the United States. The fall demand from 1.6 million barrels per day in 2015 to 1.2 million barrels this year is 400,000 barrels. That's 25% of what was being of the demand for last year. All right? That 25% reduction in the demand for crude oil and gasoline probably signals a 25% slowdown in the global economies. Now, it may be that the global economies and the U.S. economy is not going to decline by 25%, but if the prediction is accurate, that the demand for oil is down 25%, it's a good indicator that the economies themselves will decline by something along that line. It may be it's only 15%, maybe only 10%. But it could be that the economies are going to decline by 25% over the course of the next year. That's an implication. Crude trades at $30 per barrel now, and the forecasts of $20 per barrel have become more likely. More than 50 stations in Oklahoma sell gasoline for under $1.15 per gallon. One sells regular gas at $1.11 per gallon. A month ago, according to Gas Buddy, that's against the national price for an average gallon of gas of $1.72. A month ago, that price was just short of $2. Consumers are now saving 44 cents per gallon versus the same date last year. What does it all mean? Well, obviously, the price of oil is going down. The price of gasoline is going down. But the economy is also declining. It's going to slow down everything, and it will contribute to deflation. So,
which means we should start seeing, even in the government release data, the fake data that they release, we should start seeing those numbers reflect the lack of demand in oil.
I think so.
And Oklahoma is a little bit different than the rest of the country because they have huge storage facilities of oil and Oklahoma and refined. Yeah. So, you know, Oklahoma is a little bit different when you're doing these gas comparisons. I know most of the areas, I do agree, the average is around 170, 150 to 170. So, but that's a heck of a lot better than what it was just a couple of years ago. And again, I mean, what happens if the economy, if we ever have a spike up in oil again, will gasoline prices spike to the same degree?
Well, it won't happen immediately.
No.
It won't happen until the supplies that are being stored in storage tanks, storage facilities, ships parked off sea, offshore in the ocean, when that supply, that inventory is exhausted, then we should see, then legitimately, we should see the price of gasoline go up. Now, the truth of the matter is, if the price of crude oil goes up a nickel, we should see gas, we'll probably see gasoline go up a proportional amount. Immediately, just because the people are selling gasoline, are going, oh my gosh, you know. But truth is, the inventory should be exhausted before the price begins to rise.
And there's a lot of inventory out there. And you know, OPEC. I mean, Al, you wonder. They stated the obvious. They says, well, low crude oil prices are hurting the world economy. So.
And not hurting the world economy. Evidence that the world economy is hurting.
Well, I think the drop in the oil prices really added to the world economy's suffering because you had a lot of you had a lot of these emerging markets, these countries who were very dependent on those higher oil prices. And once they started playing with the crude oil prices, I don't believe the demand dropped to the point where it dropped the price of oil as it did. There was definitely, you know, an OPEC could have cut back a little bit and so forth. So, no, they intentionally dropped the price. I think the oil price got out of control for them. And they started having the economy slow down at the same time they started to tinker with the oil prices. And but with these low crude oil prices, was it the demand or was it the lower prices that you have all of these loans that are coming due and people, the layoffs, the number of layoffs that we've seen and the number of junk bonds that are going bad based on those low oil prices. So those aren't,
I believe those
aren't part of the world economy.
I get that those are problems. I get that. But which came first, the chicken or the egg? If they're saying, according to this report, the demand was 1.6 million barrels per day last year, and it's going to be 1.2 million barrels per day this year. That's evidence the demand is down. If the fundamental issue was the price, there'd be a bigger demand. The price is down. The demand should be going up. The demand is going down even though the price is going down. That means that Uncle Bob is not going to take the nephew and the niece out for a ride in the country this Sunday because he's not going to spend the money on gasoline. The demand is going down. That's the critical point. If the demand were going up, we could raise prices. But as long as the demand is down, it doesn't. I don't think the demand is driving this issue, not the price. I didn't think that the demand is going up.
I'm just saying that I think they started tinkering with the price of oil, and I believe the demand hit at the lack of demand hit at the same time, and I believe the prices spiraled out of control to the downside, and now you have all these other efforts or these other impacts in the various markets, and they just can't, you know, they can't turn it around. Even if they did cut supplies, they wouldn't be able to turn it around because I think it had a too big of an impact on all these other markets. But a lot of these countries, they were still depending on this large oil to supplying into China and so forth. And you know what? This is what's bad with all these, you know, everybody believes these reports that come out of China. Everybody believes these reports that are coming everywhere. And, you know, you can't have a lot of faith in any of the reports that are released. I mean, I never believed anything that China...
Huh? You can't have faith in all of these reports. They're on the internet, Melody.
Oh, I know that. And you know what? It's just like, yes, I do believe China and Russia are buying gold. And I believe they've been buying gold for a very long time. But we saw how distorted some of those numbers were. And so you just have to, you know.
You got to make up your own mind. You've got to take responsibility
for your own life and the defense of your life.
And you have to make certain decisions on your own. You do the best you can. You find the best information you can, and you have to make your own decisions. You can't rely on numbers that are provided by almost any source, right?
And
they are, some are more accurate than others. Some try to be as accurate as is possible, but ultimately we are relying on numbers that are coming from governments. And I've told the story a bunch of times on the program, but the premier of China, he was complaining back 6 months or a year ago that he didn't even know how big the economy was in China because he knows for a fact that the heads of the various provinces, they report happy numbers to China to the Chinese central government every month. And he knows they're lying to him just to try to make everything sound good. So the premier of China doesn't even know whether the economy is going up, down, or sideways and how much. So if he doesn't know, how can we know? Nobody knows. That's what it comes down to. People can guess. People, intelligent people, can look at, you know, certain indicators, rail traffic or whatever, and they can make guesses based on that. But real numbers, I don't think they're available right now anywhere. Our government routinely lies about the unemployment rate, the inflation rate, any other rate you care to mention. Where do we get accurate numbers? Not easily done. You can find people like John Williams come up with reliable estimates,
yes.
You know, plausible and hopefully reliable estimates. But in terms of somebody just saying down, this is the number. This is it. And it's not going to be revised next month or next year. This is the number. Where do you get that? Don't have a market for those numbers. You know, we could buy them if there was such a market, but it doesn't seem to exist. Janet Yellen talked about the oil prices today when she was testifying before the House committee. She testified before the U.S. House Financial Services Committee and delivered the central bank's semiannual monetary report to Congress. We have a few of their highlights. One of them was oil. Janet Yellen said, we're taking into account, as you said, the fact that energy sector is very hard hit. We're losing jobs there, but with respect to employment, although there really are very severe losses, it is a pretty small sector of the workforce overall. We're seeing massive cutbacks in drilling activity, and that's rippling through the manufacturing industry generally, where output is depressed. So we have negative consequences. On the other hand, if you look at the difference in oil prices relative to 2014, for the average American household, we are now looking at savings of $1,000 a year, and that's boosting consumer spending. We read from one article, and I don't remember which one it was, just in the last week or so, that it was expected that the fall in the price of crude oil would translate into more spending by Americans. But according to the article, and I can't remember the source right now, the the consumer is not spending. They're maybe paying off existing debts or they're saving. But there's a conflict between Janet Yellen says consumers are saving $1,000 a year per household, and she says that's boosting consumer spending. And the other article we read said, no, it's not, and they are much surprised by that. So where's the truth? You know, you would think we wouldn't have disagreements like this if someone were telling the truth in the first place and we could rely on that truth. There's another one, Yellen on the debt situation. At this point, the debt-to-GDP ratio looks like it should be sustainable at present levels for a number of years. As the population ages, it will be on an unsustainable upward course. This is something Congress has known about for decades, and it's important to address. She's saying, look, the debt problem is you guys in Congress. You got to handle that. We can't. When that explodes, don't blame the Fed. Talk to your congressman. She continues and said, if you look at the path of U.S. debts, if you look at the path that U.S. debt is on under current policies, it will rise from the current levels to levels well above 100% of GDP and continue to rise more or less indefinitely. Wherever you draw the line, you have got to conclude that it's an unsustainable economic situation. We can't keep going deeper into debt. And that's one of her warnings. She also talked about negative interest rates. She said, in the spirit of prudent planning, it's something that, in the light of European experience, we will look at, we should look at. She's talking about looking at negative interest rates. Not because we think there is any reason to use it. No, pay no attention to the little man behind the curtain. nothing to see here. Keep moving along, folks. Not because we think there's any reason to use it, but to know what could potentially be available. You know, and it isn't just a question of legal authority. It's also a question of, could the plumbing of the payment system in the United States handle it? Is the institutional structure of our money markets compatible with it? We have not determined that. I suspect the most important determination for the Fed will be to decide whether or not the American people are dumb enough or passive enough to accept negative interest rates. It's crazy, all right? But will people accept it? Will they go for it? They have in Europe. They have at the bank. They have in Japan. People find it apparently unremarkable that we have negative interest rates. They are not rioting or demonstrating or complaining in large numbers to the government. And therefore, negative interest rates look plausible. Well, we've got another article here from J.P. Morgan. It's actually from Reuters. And the headline is, central banks can cut rates well below zero, says J.P. Morgan. Now, what we're going to do, let's take our break for some commercials now. And we'll come back and see what J.P. Morgan thinks about negative interest rates. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. We were talking about an article from Reuters, just came out today, and the headline is Central Banks Can Cut Interest Rates Well Below Zero, says J.P. Morgan. Now, Janet Yellen says we're not going to do it. We're just thinking. We're just looking it over, but we have no plans to do it, all right? J.P. Morgan says they're going to do it. That's basically the argument in this issue. Investors fretting about the damaging impact of ultra-cheap money on banks and global markets may need to prepare for key interest rates around the world falling well below zero, according to economists at J.P. Morgan. These economists argue that limited benefits of further bond buying stimulus and forward guidance by the Federal Reserve mean that continued weak growth and low inflation may force the Federal Reserve and Bank of England to adopt negative interest rate policies. Now, when they talk about bond buying stimulus, they're talking about quantitative easing. And when they talk about foreign guidance, they're talking about forward guidance, they're talking about Federal Reserve. Janet Yellen says a few words and the market jumps. Up or down, all right? And they're saying, when they say continued weak growth and low inflation, what they mean is that quantitative easing and forward guidance aren't working anymore. And that means the Federal Reserve has lost control of the economy and is prepared to try negative interest rates as a last-ditch effort to regain control. From this perspective, negative interest rates can be viewed as grasping at straws. Negative interest rates are potentially damaging to the bank's balance sheets and net interest margins, a concern that has contributed to current global market turmoil. But the rate's lower limits are far below what many have assumed, suggesting that banks could absorb an extra hit more easily than feared. Problem we got here, and I think we touched on it yesterday, is the idea that negative interest rates means that the banks aren't making any interest on their loans. All right? They are, as interest rates, banks usually charge interest, a positive interest, 3%, 5%, 10% on their loans. Now they are put in a position where their loans are not, they actually have to pay to lend their money, rather than collect on lending their money. And this has to diminish bank profits. It has to make banks more vulnerable. They may be making money on fees and whatever else, and they may find other alternatives. But in the end, a bank that can't collect interest on its loans, what is it? And this is part of the reason why the banks are concerned about this. The article goes on and it says the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank have already adopted negative interest rates on bank deposits, while official lending rates in Switzerland and Sweden are negative. In a world of negative interest rates, the lowest rate charged on deposits at the central bank effectively becomes the default reference point for markets. Now, This is an interesting statement to me because I don't understand what they mean the default reference point for markets. Default means you're not paying the bill. You're not paying what's due. I don't understand what they mean by reference point, a default reference point. That's not clear to me. But what I do understand is it said the lowest rate charged on deposits at the central bank. What this means is that central banks will impose negative interest rates on the private banks that deposit their money with the Federal Reserve. And I think the reason for this, I mean, they don't say it, but this is my suspicion. I think the reason for this is they're going to pay negative interest rates or charge negative interest rates to the banks in order to where the banks sit back and say, well, there's no point giving our money to the Federal Reserve. They're going to charge us a negative interest rate. So what do we do with our money? Well, we're going to have to lend it someplace. I suspect, without evidence, nothing more than just a certain amount of intuition, hunch, whatever, that the Federal Reserve and maybe the fundamental idea or a fundamental idea behind negative interest rates was spawned in the 2007-2008 Great Recession and in the aftermath where the Federal Reserve gave billions of dollars to the biggest banks. And the presumption, at least the pretext, was that the banks would then lend that money to the American people, and the people would borrow the money dirt cheap, and at very low interest rates, near zero interest rates, and they would go out and buy new cars and homes and whatever, and that would stimulate the economy back into prosperity. Well, what happened is the banks sat on most of those billions of dollars. And some of that may be because the public didn't want to borrow. But regardless, the Fed gave the banks money. They claimed it was to lend to the American people. That may or may not have been true. But if it was true, the American people really didn't get that money. It didn't reach the general economy. It didn't stimulate the general economy. If that were true, and if the Fed said, okay, this time we're going to force the banks to lend the money, they could do that with the negative interest rates. The banks could sit back and say, well, we don't want to lend anything to the great unwashed out here, but we might as well lend it to them as deposit it with the Federal Reserve, where they're going to keep taking more, and they will impose larger and larger negative interest rates until we take our money and actually lend it to the public. So maybe that's a reason for negative interest rates. There's one other point, and that is that the banks themselves, the central bank, Federal Reserve in the United States, given that quantitative easing doesn't work and forward guidance doesn't work, the only thing they've got left are negative interest rates to try to control the economy. If that's true, if they can't control the economy, then a lot of people are going to start to say, what do we need them for? Why do we need the Federal Reserve if they're not doing us any good? If they can't control this economy and keep it strong, then let's get rid of them. I think maybe, without evidence, nothing but speculation, but I think maybe the Federal Reserve is saying, we got to do something to look like we're having a positive effect in this world. And the only thing they appear to have that remains in their toolbox is this concept of negative interest rates. And my point then is that maybe the Federal Reserve is talking about negative interest rates to stimulate the economy. Maybe that's their primary motive, or maybe their primary motive is saying, we got to do something that makes us look good, strong, powerful, and in control. Maybe negative interest rates is their last chance to do something where the public says, oh, the Federal Reserve, they're geniuses, they handled it, they took care of the problem. We've got a call from Jim from West Virginia. Hello, Jim, how are you doing?
I'm not doing anything. I'm hibernating, okay?
Is it cold out there?
Sir?
Is it cold where you are?
It's real dang cold here. Believe me, we've got four more days of it, two or five more days of it. Wicked cold. At any rate, I have some I have some contacts inside of West Virginia, somebody who knows somebody sort of a thing about third-hand information. And the number of business startups is like way down the last couple of years. So I don't think anybody wants to borrow the money, because I can remember when a lot of the baby boomers were competing for loans, and they kept jacking up the interest rate, boom, 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 because they could get away with it. Well, two things. The banks sat on the money, but then also at the same time, the economy was going downhill, and people just don't want to borrow. And I'm hearing more people talking about, oh, let's not buy any cars right now. Let's save money. So I think the main reason the banks are going to go belly up is because nobody wants to borrow their money, and they can't get anything for it. So no matter what, there is not one good indicator on the horizon, except the American people are waking up to this stuff. Now, it's been my contention all along. We can finance a whole lot of things if we get rid of racketeering corporations that produce no wealth. CDC is a racketeering corporation. They don't produce wealth. The EPA, the same way. We have no reason to be spending $5 trillion in the Middle East on a war. There's $8.5 trillion missing from the Pentagon. Since 96, the bottom line is money is there. We quit blowing it on killing people. And if we sit there and quit blowing it by supporting all these different organizations that produce food, fuel, fiber, like I say, materials and tools, finished goods and services anybody wants to buy. So if that is possible for us to shut those things down, we might survive financially. But folks, there is not one good omen on the horizon. And the biggest one is the fact that I found out a couple days ago, almost no business startups in West Virginia. Thought I'd let you know.
All right, Jim. Thank you. Appreciate your call. You know, the only thing you can say is that we're going to survive whatever's coming our way, most of us. We're going to live through whatever is coming our way, most of us. But it's going to be a painful process, and it's not likely to be over in 6 months or a year. When this thing finally breaks, we are likely to see something like the Great or Greater Depression. And it's not going to be something that, if they can't correct whatever recession or even inadequate recovery we're dealing with right now, they can't deal with problems now. What are they going to do if we really fall into a greater depression? What controls will they have that will work? And the answer is none. They aren't going to have any. The economy will get even worse, especially if the government decides to become draconian and push people around. It'll only make things worse. And maybe that's the point to all of this, is that the government, in its attempt to control the economy, has actually damaged the economy and stored up enormous debt, for example, and this has then stored up enormous regulations that have impaired our prosperity. They have geniuses in Congress, in the Senate, in the White House, in the, you know, whoever. These people are so smart. In the Federal Reserve, they know how to run the economy. What we're seeing right now is no, they don't. And arguably, they never did. They just didn't have enough power to mess it up as badly as they have right now. But we'll live through it, most of us. But we're going to live through it in the same sense that people lived through the Great Depression. We got through it. We came out alive. All right? But we went through a kind of purgatory during those years that was extremely painful to a lot of people. And I'm going to guess that we're going to see something similar in this country. And the biggest reason, I believe, is because of the government's incessant meddling in the economy.
Well, I agree with you, Al. But on the other hand, we can't forget that it just isn't our government, and that central bank, the Federal Reserve, was created just so they could control and make sure that we had a great economy for the American people. I personally believe this has been a long, drawn-out plan. They're very patient people to lower our standard of living. The wealthier got wealthier and more powerful, and it was to destroy this country. And it was interesting, too, because last night I was listening to a comment by Marco Rubio, and by no means do I support the guy, but he made an interesting statement. He said, "This there is a plan to destroy this country." And there is a plan. The plan has been in effect for a very long time. And so I think what we're seeing is just the end of their plan. And have they lost control of it? Have they, you know, part of the tinkering and part of the controlling of the economies along the, you know, the past years? Yeah, it was their little experiment. It was, you know, they were able to become wealthier and wealthier. And, you know, you can't look back and not see it. And not see the changes, not see all the legislation that was introduced and the laws and the tinkering of our monetary policy, and not come to the same conclusion. They didn't do those changes of our monetary policy, you know, by need. They did it by want, because they knew exactly where it was headed. They wanted to grow big government, and they knew exactly where we would be so many years later. And there's only one outcome you can have when you have a fiat currency. And we're living it today. And it's just not this country, but it's you know, every nation on this earth that has a fiat currency.
Which means that when the fiat currency finally collapses, as it inevitably must, the whole world is going down.
And that's
the whole world economy. This is the systemic problem we are all facing.
Equal footing, a level playing field.
Yeah. I don't know how level it's going to be, but it's
going to
be
leveled.
Yeah, a leveled playing field, not a level playing field, a leveled playing field.
A leveled playing
field. Yeah, and everybody's going to suffer out of this. And some people will get by. There's a strong probability.
The only ones that are going to get by, well, if you don't have anything, you know, their biggest problem is going to be food. Okay, their biggest problem is going to be food, just to feed their families. If they don't have, you know, if they are the poor of this country, they'll be affected by that. But if people have savings and they worked and they have retirement accounts, you know, you're going to lose a large part of it. It will, a lot of those paper investments can and will go to zero. And you have to get them insured. The only way you can get them insured that I know of is through purchasing gold. That is your insurance policy. That is your insurance wealth, your wealth insurance.
All right, folks, we have to leave it at that because we're out of time. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, I hope you tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, money.